CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. It is the 13th of July, and there's there's chaos and confusion all over the country. But we'll hopefully try and bring some sense and some sensibility to your life this morning. There are lots of people with interesting points of view on all the looting and rioting that's been happening, particularly in KZN and in Gauteng. There are all those funny memes, too, of like Cape Townians looking at the rest of the country, like, you know, down their noses
at
us.
Yeah, Cape Town is its own country. It's its own world. Really? It doesn't relate to the problems of South Africa.
We should,
you know, it's just like, look at them, those people. Oh, my gosh, what are they doing?
Yeah, they look down on us. We should let them be their own country. I think Cape Town runs better than the rest of the country, and they should be allowed to be separate from us. They shouldn't be held back by the savage people of Gauteng and the Free State and the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And mind you, I should say that at this point, the two most badly behaved provinces are Gauteng and KZN. Right. The rest, it's not fair of me to draw the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Northwest, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Free State into that. It's not their fault. They haven't done anything wrong. Let's not blame them. Although it may spread, who knows? I hope it doesn't, obviously.
The problem for the Cape Townians is who would do the work? You know, like the wealthy ones would be fine in like the Winelands and sort of sea point. But most people are, you know, are like we're working every day. And
you just
Cape Townians
have to make sure
you have a surf in the morning.
You make sure you're in before they close the gates. That's all. All right. I got an email from Steph, and this is an interesting discussion that we haven't had yet on the show. Steph says, I'm catching up on a podcast from the other day. You guys were discussing ways to live in South Africa that bypass the idiots in the government. Remember, we were talking about how you should become self-sufficient, right? Most of us know how to do this in terms of electricity and water, and this is becoming easier and more affordable to do. However, something that really worries me is education. We have one child, although he's a long way from being school age. As it stands, we would not be able to afford the private schools in our area, but we're very quickly losing faith in government's education system. I'm sure that there are many other people in the same situation. What is the solution? No sane parent wants to homeschool their own child, but maybe cottage schools are the way forward. And she puts that in inverted commas, cottage schools. Small groups of kids being taught by retired teachers who are looking for extra income. And perhaps the Cambridge curriculum, which they could use, and some prestigious private schools in South Africa use it, thereby giving our children an opportunity to pursue tertiary education anywhere in the world. I feel there is a gap in the market for this, and I'm sincerely hoping that some clever people do something about it so that we can educate our children in an affordable way that does not rely on the ignoramus tools in the Department of Education. If you guys could help us find who the others are who are thinking like this, then we could have a platform on your show, and that would be amazing. Thanks for the incredible show. Never miss a day. Peace and love, Steph. Okay, so education, obviously, is a huge priority. It's one of the main concerns of any parent. It's not just of any parent, but even people who are in the in their late teens and are thinking about where they want to study, if they want to study. They're thinking about what kind of job they want to do one day. Education is massively important. Nelson Mandela said that education is the most important ingredient to being free. And I think that's right. But the quality of that education has come into question. And I don't believe that Angie Motshekga and her people are necessarily giving us the best options. I don't think that there are a lot of young people in this country are growing up with the requisite tools in terms of literacy, numeracy, the basic skills that you need to get through the day. I don't think we're equipping our kids properly. I think that's what Steph's saying too. So there's no argument between us. Her idea of the cottage schools is an interesting one, and I like it. I like it because, again, it's people looking to themselves rather than looking to someone else to solve their problems. I think that there is going to be an element of homeschooling that's going to stay now, because whether parents like it or not, I'm afraid, you know, this coronavirus has shown up just how disconnected so many parents are from their kids and how many kids are disconnected from the education system. So I think it's a bit of a wake-up call in some ways, right? Maybe this is where we find those retired teachers. We find those people who have a love for education, and we allow them to do their thing from anywhere. You know, if you're a language lecturer and you're lecturing people in isiZulu or in English or in Afrikaans or in French or whatever it might be, you could do that from anywhere. It's obviously up to the kid then to concentrate on the other side of that. But you know, like with podcasting, I've always called this show like my own university. And I invite people onto the show who I think will teach all of us things. It feels like a bit of a university. We could do that for kids. We could have shows that kids listen to give themselves an idea of how the world works, a general education. And then we have particularly talented people and passionate people teach them in each subject. And the parents can even select what they want their kids to learn. If you want your kids to pay attention only to the sciences, to mathematics, to the really important things, to, you know, literacy, numeracy, the ability to calculate very basic things, the ability to figure out your way in the world, and maybe a couple of practical subjects thrown in there too, then as a parent, that sounds like a really good option. If you could go in and select, almost like tick the boxes of what you wanted your kid to learn, that's much more sensible and seems more responsible than just handing your kid over to the state for a whole, you know, 6 hours every day. Doesn't it?
This is something that I deeply care about. Education is something that's, you know, as I'm getting older and I'm becoming more grateful for what I was able to be given. And
I know that about me, you. That's why I brought this up.
No, but I mean, hey, it is what it is. And I do deeply care about it because, yeah. Man, it's tough to not sound like I normally sound. But when you do encounter people who haven't come from an academic background and in the working space, it becomes very evident. And there's a foundational gap. And I'm sorry, let that sound how it sounds. I'm on the opposite side of you here. And so number one, those cottage style schools are happening. One of our colleagues here at work, her daughter has just moved to one of these types of schools, mm-hmm. where a global syllabus is available.
Right.
But I'm anti that. And it may be because of my bias. Number one, from a philosophical sense, Socrates, when he started what we now know as boarding schools, was you're actually supposed to take the child away from the corrupt society, and you take them away so that you can educate them holistically. You don't just educate a child with education like mathematics and whatever. So I'm big on institutions are still important. I don't think we can just leave it to us as individuals. I don't think that's a good way, because children need to develop. We know this now. Holistically, and because I come from a strong institution, I'm biased, but we need to fight for our institutions to become stronger, because I don't think as individuals we're actually quite good.
I think
we're very good at organizing.
I think in this country that's not an option that's available to most people, Mbulelo. You're not being well. You're making it about you. It's not about you.
Well, I mean, look, institutions need to be strong, because ultimately what's going to happen is I know it sounds ideal to...
They've failed so many of us. I understand people looking to themselves rather. You know, that's like you saying to me, well, even though Eskom isn't really good at providing electricity, let's just keep giving them a chance until they are. You know what I mean?
No, sure. But I walk into Investec today where kids, parents would want their kids to work. And I recognize every single child in there, 90% of them went to schools like me. So it tells you that something, yeah. You need that.
Okay.
Like, unfortunately, you just need that.
I don't want to like have a huge argument about this, because Steph is looking for answers, and you and I could talk about this all day. We do care about it way more than we probably should. You said the other day, it's important to teach people how to think, not what to think, right?
Sure.
I don't know that institutions can do that. I think that only comes from your parents, the people you spend time with, a natural curiosity, and the abundance of information that's given to us on the internet now. I don't think we need, you know, huge institutions. I don't think we need massive school and university infrastructure everywhere anymore. If we've learned anything in the last year, it's that we don't need those things.
Look, I don't see Oxford and Eton and these schools going anywhere, and they will continue to run your lives. Unfortunately, I am biased to that. You need strong institutions. But again, okay, no. I'm not a parent. No, I'm very biased.
What do you say, Simpiwe?
So my question is, I do understand the importance of education and like having a good educational system, but how are the kids being taught this information? I think is also something we need to take into consideration, because English is not necessarily always like well, it's not the most spoken language in South Africa.
No.
So how people receiving this information makes a big deal as well, because sure. if you are Zulu and that's how you think and that's like the community you were brought up with, now coming into the working world where everyone speaks English, it doesn't matter how educated you are, you're going to have a barrier to entry because you can't communicate the language. So that's also, I think, something that needs to be taken into consideration.
There will be that barrier, but you can learn the language at an early age. I mean, there are lots of people who do, and then they become very proficient. So I think that's almost an argument against your position, just thinking about it.
No, I'm saying, but like when you go to school, there's like this whole thing of like, we should be learning an African language. So instead of Afrikaans, people should be learning isiZulu, Xhosa, their native language. So it's to say that there's people in communities, they've never spoken English. And if you've learned, you know, everything that you know, and now you have to be taken into a different world.
Yeah, but you see, like the problem is simply when they're never going to hire you at CERN in Switzerland, at the Large Hadron Collider, if you only speak isiZulu. In fact, they're not even going to hire you if you only speak Swiss. You're going to have to learn English somewhere along the way. You're going to have to. So, like, this is also, there's a reality. You know, I often get into arguments with, like, Afrikaans friends of mine who say, no, they only need to speak Afrikaans. I'm like, no, you really, like, I know English is not the easiest language to learn, but you've got to, if you want to be in the real world, you have to either speak that or Mandarin or maybe Spanish. But those are the only three that you could really take seriously as international languages. Sorry, that's just how it is. It's not very fair, but that's what it is.
I think what Simpiwe is saying as well is you need to actually start learning it properly at an early age.
Yes,
because
absolutely. Language is idiosyncratic. She's 100% right then. No, then I don't have any argument with you. You're 100% correct. But also numbers, you know, like numbers. We are terrible at numbers in this country. I mean, we joke on this show about how bad we are at numbers. But the reality is that South Africa, according to the most available, most up-to-date information that we can get, on this continent alone, South Africa has the least numerate, least literate people. Okay, our country. We're not the worst country in Africa. There are countries like the Gambia and Liberia and Burkina Faso and, at the moment, like Somalia, Djibouti, these places that don't even have like a formal education system. And they somehow outperform us. How is that possible? It's how we're doing it. And we're doing it wrong, clearly. So to go back to Steph's email, I don't know the answer. Maybe some people who are listening to us do. Count the number of waking hours your kids spend with you versus at school. Now you know who's raising them. That's an interesting point. That's a really interesting point. Courtney makes the point that educated people are leaving and plan to continue doing that. That's also, we're losing really smart people. So we're left with a whole lot of, you know, kind of middle to lower qualifications in the marketplace. Instead of using retired teachers, says Inga, why not take young teachers that aren't able to get work? Staff rotation in schools is extremely slow. There are young teachers who cannot find work. I agree. Use them. Bridget says, I have a friend who runs a homeschooling school called Akasha in Kensington and Johannesburg, and they do Cambridge, and it's from nursery school to matric. That's interesting. That's people solving problems, you know. And I don't think, God bless her, but I don't think Angie is ever going to solve these problems for us. Garrett says, technology and the world changes and evolves so fast, but education and style hasn't changed in many decades. That's absolutely true.
Said.
To work abroad and get a visa, you have to do an English test called the IELTS. That's to make sure that you can understand basic English. Yeah. And obviously, if you go to a place like China or you go to a place like Spain, you'll have to learn to speak their language. That's just how it works. Anyway, I mean, I don't know the answer, guys, but I think that Steph's question is really good. And if I were a parent right now, I don't know that I'd do what Mbulelo is suggesting and trust the institutions. I think I'd start looking for solutions myself, even if it is, you know, finding someone in the neighborhood who's a vet, and that person can teach them biology or anatomy. You find someone in the neighborhood who is a writer, and that person can teach them literature and poetry and all that kind of thing. That's what I'd like to do.
You know, I'd like to go with you, but people aren't good at organizing themselves. Like, show me.
No, I agree.
People are not good at organizing themselves. So, unfortunately, well, for now, look, it's because I'm biased. And I'm seeing more and more, even people in the hood and my cousins and things like that telling me in the Eastern Cape that communities are organizing their own private schools now, just so people know that. I'm not saying something that's crazy. Is that there are people who come from, I'm talking rural. My family's rural, not like Soweto. They're organizing private schools now where children, if you're not certain maths, English, they don't let you in. They don't care. You can go to the sort of old school old school schools. They're starting private schools now. So I'm not talking about something which I think is crazy. And perhaps if you live somewhere that isn't the suburbs, maybe there's something like that there.
But you know,
that leans to that institution.
I reckon, again, if people are desperate enough, they do organize themselves. I mean, look at what you've got in these neighborhoods in Durban at the moment. You have people who, like, suddenly they've got a neighborhood watch. Suddenly there are a whole lot of people with guns who are, like, protecting their own families. Like, it's amazing how if things get bad enough, people do resort to organizing themselves, to putting systems in place. And sometimes those systems show you just how bad the systems that you thought worked before were. Anyway, let's leave it alone. There are also some other things that I wanted to talk about this morning. And we've got Toy the Lazy joining us in a short while. But first, this is interesting. The ANC, according to Pulemabe, cannot be blamed for the criminal acts that are being committed in Jacob Zuma's name. Okay, so as long as you don't blame the ANC, everything's fine. That's what he says.
Oh, okay. Ah, cool.
Yeah, he doesn't mind if you're angry or if you know your shop is burnt down or someone torches your car or you get hurt in a riot. But as long as you don't blame the ANC, Pulemabe says that's absolutely fine. They shouldn't be held responsible for stealing, damage to infrastructure that's being carried out in the name of Jacob Zuma. A number of malls and shops were looted, vandalized, and some even burnt down by individuals claiming to be protesting in the name of the former president. These are not ANC members. No, no. You can't say that, Pule, because you don't know that. Do you have facial recognition cameras on every rioter that you know for a fact they're not card-carrying members of the ANC? These people seem to be pretty damn passionate about two things, stealing and Jacob Zuma, at least according to a vast majority of them, those two things, right? The stealing we can see, the Jacob Zuma is the excuse. So some of them might not really be Jacob Zuma supporters, but they're in on this. Chances are that's exactly how the ANC works. Most of them are really into stealing. They're not that much into the ANC, Pule. I just want to point
that out. The ANC doesn't work, Gareth. No. Sorry, the ANC doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
So don't even – I know what you meant, but the ANC doesn't work.
That's true. So he says, we must be careful. We must not make the ANC to be part of something. That's what he says, that it's not involved in. When you loot a shop, he says, that's a criminal activity. It has nothing to do with the ANC. A crime is a crime.
It's crime. I live at my house, and I'm affected by crime. I just won't have it.
Pule, it's just funny to me that most of the – and Simpiwe said this earlier. I'm just going to go back to your words of wisdom. Simpiwe said, the real looting has already happened, that 500 billion. Now, who took that, Pule? Was that – those weren't ANC
people. No, it wasn't the ANC.
Those were criminals, nah. Nah, criminals, nah. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Just trying to get my ducks in a row here. Sorry, everybody. It took me a while to, like, click to get as advanced.
Criminals stole the money, not ANC. That is what they are saying. They never cease to amaze me. They always have, like, the same statement when you ask them, so why did you steal the money? No, you see what happened in 1978 caused us to be in this predicament, fellow comrade. In fact, it is because of our people that this has happened. Okay, sharp. The looting's happening. No. It is not us. Do not involve us.
Nelson
in
Mandela.
This matter.
And you must always, Nelson Mandela built this country in order for us as a rainbow nation,
opportunity
as a white
for everyone. That stuff.
Together now. Yeah.
You know, like so much of that shit just rings so hollow now. We had to get to this point, though. We had to get to this point, though, didn't we? All right, I'm very excited. We'll speak to Toy the Lazy in just a minute or two. I'm excited to see her again, and it's been a while since we had her in the studio, since we had her on the show, and there's never any reason that we should wait this long to see her lovely face again. But we'll get to her in a second. I just want to quickly share this story with you. Apparently a sealed copy of a Super Mario 64 video game. Amazing. Has sold at an auction for more than $1.5 million. So if you have
what
the original video game, Super Mario 64, and it's sealed, in other words, never been opened. In 1996, they made this. All right. It was a launch title for the Nintendo 64 console. It was one of the most influential early 3D platformers. The auction house said there were fewer than five copies in this kind of condition. Apparently, an original Legend of Zelda cartridge, which had sold 2 days before, sold for just $870,000. But this one sold for $1.5 million. Amazing. Amazing. We talk about collections on the show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Collect these things, you could be in some serious money. And that's why we talk about it.
I think I just might start collecting, guys. I might become a millionaire, hey? After 20 years. Like, what?
Exactly. Collectomania is going to be back on cliffcentral.com. We skipped it yesterday because our guest let us down at the last minute the night before at 11 o'clock. But we'll have Collectomania and a brand new episode of that for you soon, just around the corner. It's brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange. And I hope you'll join us for the next episode of that. All right, let's get to Toya DeLazy. I want to see what she's up to. We haven't spoken to her in such a long time, and she's one of my favorite people in the whole world. Here she is, looking absolutely magnificent, as always. Hello, Toya DeLazy. How are you, gorgeous?
Oh, hello, Gareth. Hello, guys.
You're a little bit soft. I don't know why, but it seems like your mic is like, there's a gate or something on it. There's some kind of compression on your microphone. Just see if we can turn that up.
Okay.
There. Should be better now. You hear me now? How are you?
I am fine, thank you. it's actually nice to reconnect. Exactly. It's been very long.
Well, I've got so much to ask you and so much to talk to you about. I mean, first of all, what's been happening with you? Because it's been 6 years since you released any new music, and people have been asking, like, what's going on? Are you just trying to make us hungry for nothing? I mean, we haven't forgotten who you are. We're waiting for the next big thing to come. So what's been happening with your music?
You know, guys, like, I went independent 2015 from the record label. And yeah, since then, you have to hustle on your own, right? So it took a really long time to get to this point that I'm at. But it's great because I felt like, I know, like, everyone thinks I was like already I'd already made it. But for me, while I was in SA at the time, I just felt like I didn't know what the world was about. And there was so much more I wanted to know and learn and grow also, just as a...
Didn't you go overseas? You did go overseas for a while, didn't you?
Yes. Oh. I tried New York.
Mm-hmm.
I tried Los Angeles, and I was like, not really the vibe, and I don't want to get shot. And, you know, like...
shot. And then you came back here, and there's people shooting and carrying on, right?
Then I'm in UK now.
You're in the UK at the moment. Okay, sorry, I thought you were over here. So you're not back in South Africa at the moment. So listen, I read a really interesting article about you the other day on Times Live. They basically said, here's the headline, Toya DeLazy believes her existence triggers hate because she's royalty. Now, I know how it is when people make a headline up about you. Because this has happened a million times to me. I know it's happened to you a million times too. Is that what you actually said? And if you did say that, can you explain to us what you meant? Because these articles never help you to understand what people really mean.
Exactly. I think articles have actually made people really think I'm a weirdo more. But anyway, thanks for the platform.
Sure. No, explain yourself, because I'm sick of these headlines also. They're meant to get clicks. They're not really meant to tell us about the people we care about. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, no, I mean, I'm sure I may have mentioned, but that wasn't like, oh my goodness, you guys hate me because I'm royal. I was just wondering why, like, people get so triggered by me. And I'm not making this up. Like, I get a lot of social media hate, often from South Africans, often from black South Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's because I'm queer.
Listen, sorry, just hold on. Toya, we really can't hear you. Can we just try and sort out your microphone? Simpiwe, won't you just help Toya just sort out the sound over there? And then because people are complaining that they can't really hear you so well, and I don't want you to be misunderstood a second time. It's bad enough.
Absolutely.
It's bad enough when the newspapers give you one time when they can't understand you. I'm just going to take you off the stream for a minute and then let Simpiwe figure it out just quickly. Toy the Lazy, she's looking great. I love that hair. It's, it's like it's insane. Fantastic.
Great energy.
Yeah, she has. And remember, the reason that we're talking to her about this in particular is she is a Buthelezi. So she's related to the Zulu king. She's related to Mangosuthu Buthelezi. She's someone who's been a part of South Africa's I suppose she's been part of our social and celebrity click for some time now, but she's also a hugely influential artist. And she's someone who is, you know, she said she's queer. That's the word she uses to describe it. And that's a confusing thing for a lot of South Africans, particularly ones who are more traditionally minded and more conservative. So we'll find out from her how all of that plays into the identity stuff that she constantly gets bombarded with by people. Because that's also, you know, sometimes people are reacting because of the way they feel rather than anything to do with you. It's how you make them feel, and that's what she's calling the triggering. So I want to hear all about that too. So we'll speak to her in a second.
It is still weird to me, like if somebody's gay or whatever, that people care so much, because I'm like, how boring is your day that your biggest concern is that somebody's gay? Like I think to myself, get a job. Or get a wife, get a girlfriend. Something. Maybe you need some problems in your life.
Yeah, you really don't have enough to worry. You don't have enough to worry about if that's the stuff that you think about all day. It's very, very strange. I agree with you. It's like also, you know, like someone's sexuality is not something that even their best friends get to deal with hands on. I mean, it's if you think about how much time in anyone, even if the most oversexed person imaginable. You maybe get 20 minutes to an hour of sex a day if you're lucky, right? If you're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if what you do in those 20 minutes to an hour is so important to other people who are not, by the way, having sex with you, you've got to ask why they would be so interested in it. There's something very strange about that. It drives me up the wall.
Yeah, it does. It's so crazy to me. And I understand, obviously, I don't want to sound ignorant. We are an incredibly traditional and unbelievably conservative religious country. So I can understand within the fabric of our society, but I'm also like, I'm talking people that I think are pretty liberal. I'm like, no, in 2021, you still care about people being gay. Like, why is your life so boring? Because ultimately, for me, or not just me, for goodness sake, try and be a good person.
Aren't these the same people who want to tell you to wear a mask when you're on your own in your own house? Aren't they the same people? It's that same authoritarian impulse, right? That's what it
is. They're a bunch of dickheads. I don't want to get academic about it. You're a bunch of dickheads.
All right, let me see if we can get a job. Let me see if we can get Toya back on. Toya, can you hear us now?
Oh, that feels good.
Much better. That's fantastic. All right. Good. So you were telling us just a second ago, I'm not going to go over old territory, but there was this story about you and how you trigger people. And you said you get a lot of communication from people in South Africa, people who are black, white, whatever. But they seem to be very triggered by the fact that maybe it's because you're royal. Maybe it's because you're talented. Maybe it's because you're not conventional. Maybe it's because you're queer. What do you think it is? Yeah. I'm interested in what people say about you.
I really don't know. I think also, you know, we're in a very conservative society, and this is one of the reasons I also had to leave. As an artist, you can't be your best self if you're also scared you might just get corrective raped or any of those things that kind of happen in our society, you know. I needed to be in a place where I could be completely free to express every part of me, to be the best artist I can be, as a South African, as a Zulu, as a human being, you know.
But it saddens me that you couldn't feel that kind of safety in your own home country and with your own people. That really makes me very sad. Do you feel more accepted in London? Do you feel more accepted in Los Angeles and New York?
Well, definitely. I mean, I guess the free world has worked through, or the first world has worked through, you know, the issues when it comes to whether it's the homophobias and, you know, London is a huge melting pot. I mean, there's people from everywhere and a big African community here. So I don't know, people are okay. You could walk with the cat on your head and say, yeah, nobody will look at you twice, you know, Batter Island.
And what is it about your being royal, which is again something you don't choose, you know, that's like being black or being white or being gay, frankly. It's something you don't choose. You can't help it. You were born into this family that has a position in society and has been in the news rather a lot in the last year. And by the way, I'm sorry, my condolences to you for losing family. You know, they've been for most of us, this is a story in the news, but these are actually family members of yours.
It was kind of crazy. I didn't get to go home. I think it's kind of just hitting me.
Mm. No, you're allowed to be emotional about it. Don't feel bad about that. The king, the late king, Gudrun Zweletini, he was like your uncle, right? You spent a lot of time with him.
Yeah, and the queen.
Mm.
It's just been a bit crazy.
when people say to you that you're a problem for them in some way because you're royal, what kind of a response are you meant to have for that? And how does it make you feel?
I don't know. I think they just blame me for stuff like stuff that happened before I was born, like with my grandfather, which I don't know about and I've tried to ask about, but it's just awkward all around. Like, I can't even say the word Bopatong or something happened over there.
Bopatong, are you talking with killed. Your when you say your grandfather, you're talking about Mangosuthu Buthelezi, right?
Yeah. So a lot of people like just get triggered by that, and like even if I've got something cool to share, it's like I'll just immediately get hate first. I don't know. if you know, you must tell me one day and I'll fix it, because it's like,
no, you don't have to fix a damn thing, honey.
I don't know.
You have nothing to fix. You know what? Other people have lots of things to fix in themselves. If they're the ones who are coming at you with hatred, that's really not your fault. What other people think of you is none of your business.
True. Yeah, but it gets a lot online. Like recently, I kind of also mine data, but like, okay, mine. I'm not like the big guys, but sometimes I just ask questions because I just know how they think. And I had this poll. I was like, okay, because they were like, oh, you fell off. Like they try to make me feel bad, even when I'm pushing, even when I'm on BBC Radio 1, like, it's like, nah, it hasn't happened, you know?
Mm.
And I was like, fine then. Here's a poll. Did I fell off or never left? And like literally 30,000 people were on that poll. And like, they were making sure that, like, you know, it was negative, but either way, I was just like, wow, 30,000 people were there. It felt like a stadium. I've never had an audience like that since the plague.
So, how long have you been away from South Africa?
Not too long, because I came to South Africa again, November 24, just as the lockdown was kicking in. So I was so lucky to get in. And then, yeah, I was here. I shot Resurrection with Carl Lewis in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed here a bit. And then we had to go back because of the hotel quarantines in the UK. Yeah, so February 19, then I came back here. So, yeah, at least I saw you get home a bit.
Well, I mean, so you mentioned Resurrection, which is very cool. I mean, there's also a bit of the story which is about taking a break. And you said you were going to take some time to focus on your mental health. Now, again, is that the newspaper headline? Is that the clickbait? Or was that something that you actually that you put on your list of things you wanted to spend some time doing?
Yeah, wait. Did they just announce that now or
no,
before?
No, it was all sort of part of that article.
Yeah. Yes, I've had to. I mean, I realized that I actually – yeah, I don't think we actually respect the mental issues we have, especially as black people and people of color in South Africa, with everything we've gone through, apartheid and, black and white. I mean, it affected both sides of the coin, and worse for black people who don't want to admit. And it comes through in our families. It comes through in our societies. It comes through in so many ways. And as a person like me, I'm a very free spirit. And when, you know, Yeah, I guess when people attack you, it also affects you. I'm also a person who's lost both parents, you know, so yeah. I'm not really, I need this sort of support. I realized I actually need mental health support. And thanks to my girlfriend who hooked me up with that, I didn't even know that you could get through the issues I've gone through, you know. I was self-medicating with alcohol and, you know, and I'm way better now. I'm back into sports and, yeah, I'm just healing my mind and trying to understand things. And
well, you're looking really terrific. Who's this? Thank you. Is this the girlfriend? How long have you been with her?
Guess how long?
I don't know. I mean, is this a girlfriend you had before you left?
The whole time.
Six years?
Nope.
How long?
Nine.
Yeah. 9 years.
That's a very serious relationship. Sure.
That's a year. Umshato. Just as long as it's low as shate, guys. 9 years.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That is about four times longer than any relationship I've ever had. you're more successful than
me.
Bro, it is what it is.
and you two, I mean, obviously it's a really good relationship, but you wouldn't have hung around for 9 years. But she supports you because of, obviously, you know, being a public figure, being so open about your career, your life, your background, everything else. She needs to be strong to be able to give you the support you need, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no. Yeah, and those are the other things I try to protect, you know, like when you've gone through so much, you've lost family and you try to create your own, you try to make your own joy and you can't have people attacking that, you know, that's all I've got now. And the music, of course, but...
No, of course, and your music...
Yeah, I try to protect that.
Your music speaks for itself. That doesn't need any defending at all. It's as good now as it's ever been. And to me, like that contribution that you've made to South Africa's culture, to our own... musical anthology in this country. That's stuff that no one can ever take away from you, no matter how shitty they get on Twitter. Do you speak to your grandfather? When last did you have a chat with him? Because he's been really busy for a man who's like well into his 90s. He just doesn't seem like he's not slowing down, huh?
We haven't been in touch for whiles. I think because it's been so busy, and I'll be honest, I just wanted to kind of distance myself from the entire drama. It's just not good for my mental health.
Like, it has been a drama. I mean,
everyone was fighting and I'm just, my spirit is really chilled. I don't know. I can't handle it. And I'm just waiting for them to figure it out and
settle down.
Yeah. Yeah, mate. It's a lot.
Well, I'm sure the new king still needs some time to settle down as well. Mr. Zulu, because you obviously know him because you guys would have all, you know, spent time around each other as kids.
Yeah.
But has he reached out and said, hey, you know, how are you doing?
What's
because, I mean, he was also in the U.S. for a while.
Yeah. Yes. Don Mr. Zulu is an amazing, amazing guy. Soft-spoken, beautiful spirit. And what I love about him, he would know the experience of a South African. Like, he's gone through life, you know.
Mm.
So I'm happy that it's somebody who's not just blasé. People and so, but I think he also needs time as someone. I know what he's going through because he also lost both parents. Worse for him,
that's right.
First Isilo, and then straight after, a month later, in Lukulu. So he's been incredibly brave, you know. And people are thinking now he must join all this noise. I'm just like, bro, heal, just heal. You're gonna be a king for as long as like he just needs to heal and then come through strong. And focus. So that's my two cents.
And I mean, you know, the Zulu people at the moment are having a pretty tough time because they're being pulled this way and that way by all kinds of politics. By, you know, I'm sure you've heard about all the riots and looting that are happening in KZN at the moment.
It's horrific.
It really is. It's very scary. And there's this leadership vacuum, which was probably made worse by the fact that, you know, the actual
king
is gone. And we had to find a new king. But there's so much pride in the Zulu nation, and there's so many people in the Zulu nation that take huge strength from the fact that they belong to this incredible history, this incredible culture. Yeah. And it's something that you've infused into your music too. Are people curious about that in London, for example? I mean, do they ask you about being Zulu, mm-hmm. about being in the royal family? Do they ask you about what kinds of things you grew up learning, the language, the sort of traditions, those kinds of things?
Yes. And I think that's what encouraged me to carry on. You know, I don't know why in SA, maybe it just didn't come across as much. Like, sometimes I feel like, you know, we get a bit erased by our education because we're not really, it becomes a bit, not embarrassing, but for me, it was pretty tough at school, whether it was the color, the language. It felt like it was a bit of an erasure. And sometimes people come out of school not being able to even speak their home languages anymore. So,
Have you found anyone else to speak isiZulu with in London?
Tenjiwe. Tenjiwe, you know the comedian Tenjiwe?
Yes.
She lives here. So she came, cool. She came to visit me like a week ago. We just chilled and stuff, yeah. It's great. I'm glad they love that. But also I thought, as a South African, I'm here. English is from here. What can I share with them? Mm. That is different. I mean, there's thousands of artists here. And especially during the pandemic, it was like, you know, what do I have to share? I mean, if we're going to try tackle in English, I mean, this is their home.
Sure.
I need to bring something else. And then I realized I was homesick as well. And then just drawing strength from, you know, most people of color here don't know their history.
Yeah.
And they only know that they were slaves, you know.
Right.
So me coming through with this, oh my goodness, do you know, like, we battled the British in 1879. Yeah. My great-great-grandfather was in there. They're like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, and I still...
Yeah,
and I'm like... And they're like, what?
Your three greats-grandfather had dinner with Queen Victoria at Windsor Castle.
I know.
And he negotiated part of the settlement of that Anglo-Zulu War. As her equal, you know, there was a lovely story about her that she treated him. And remember, this is like in 1890 or 1900 or so.
1883.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. I mean, she treated him like the king of any European country. And at that stage, that was unheard of, you know. It's just, and he stood up for himself and he stood up for his people. This is Te Chwayo we're talking about now.
Yes.
And I mean, that's a hell of a story to share. Like, as you say, so many people of color have only this generalized narrative where they're not really, they don't know, because sometimes they just don't have the information. Sometimes it's
absolutely.
Just, you know, it's convenient to just like grab onto whatever narrative you can. But in your case, you've got this detailed history going all the way back to like 1600 and something, which is it's quite
crazy.
Extraordinary. It really is. It's an amazing story. And also the fact that on the African continent, the Zulu kind of have a unique story, because so many other tribes and nations were subjugated and they were not. You know, Isandlwana was a big embarrassment to the British.
Yeah.
I mean, I could talk to you about this stuff all day long. I want to just quickly go back to something you said a moment ago. When you're at school, there seems to be this conflict between what you want to learn about the modern world and then what you want to keep about your tradition and your language that you grew up with and all of that stuff. And I think this is true for everybody, not just for people who are born into the royal family, right? How do you think South Africa is dealing with that? Do you think that we have figured out better ways of teaching people and making them feel pride in their history and in their culture? Or must our history, for so many people in this country, black people I'm talking about now, must their history always be wound up in this terribly depressing, terribly sad victim thing? Like, there's nothing there to be proud of. And for many people, that can be extremely painful.
Yes.
And if you've just got pain, and really there's a hugely colorful and interesting history for many, many black people in this country that they could explore if maybe our education system did a better job of it, but they don't.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of work to be done. Just thinking that Zuleika, that young girl who still had to march for her hair to be like, stop policing her hair.
Pretoria Girls High, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those things are not okay. You can't polish people's hair as much as you can't polish their skin or their language, you know? And if we could stop doing education should be teaching us about things like astrology or how to plan a funeral, or, you know, stuff. It shouldn't be taken away from who you are.
Right.
You know, I've had brilliant teachers. I'm not going to take away from South African teaching, but I've been part of very toxic cultures as well within those frames. And those cultures have made me feel embarrassed about who I am, even coming from the rich heritage I come from.
No.
Just because
you hinted something here that I think a lot of people try to avoid talking about, but we do have a very, again, I'm going to say these words, even though I don't know that they apply completely.
We're both going to get dragged.
Like a toxic masculinity, patriarchy type thing. And believe me, I'm not one of those guys who jumps on the bandwagon and starts beating up on men in general. But we do have in South Africa a huge number of very damaged men who, because they don't know how to deal with their own damage and their own lack of the right role models, of you know, fathers who were present in their lives, for various reasons, not their fault. But the fact is they sometimes take that out on women. And you mentioned right at the start of this, as a woman who's gay, you were worried, and you still worry, I'm sure, about other women in this country who have terrible things done to them because it hurts men's feelings. It makes men feel less than. This is something that we've never really dealt with, and people are scared to talk about it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, this is where everything stems from. When I say we got mental health issues, the African family was broken up when people had to leave their homes for the jobs, leave their families alone.
Yeah.
It, as you're saying, it's not their faults, but this culture has continued. And that's why our dads aren't there. I also grew up without my dad. I still don't know why. And by the time I started getting to meet him and then I lost him, it's like, lost time. I'll never know what it feels like to have that.
How old were you when he died?
I was 27.
Sure. And how long did you actually have between the time you reconciled with him and the time he died?
I think from... Wait, was I... Yeah, from... I first met him when I was 15. And then... Yeah, it was like on and off so it was just on and off from then.
Sure. That must have been tough, because also, I mean, that's the you know, your name is a play on Buthelezi, Toya de Lazy, you know, and when I think of you, it's only because, you know, we've spoken a couple of times that I know so much about your story. But for many other people, I mean, your music is the thing that makes them feel part of a tribe and part of a nation and part of like a creative spirit, which I think is very special. You've got to keep doing that, man. We need to hear more music from you. And promise me that while you're in London, you're going to be working hard, doing some recordings. You're going to be writing some more music, because we need to hear more from you.
For sure. I think Afrorave is going to be a vehicle for, it's not only for me and Black and white South Africans. Like, I'm still working with so many South Africans. My video directors are from South Africa. Carl Lewis, a South African. My engineers are South African. My producer for Resurrections from Peter Maritzburg.
Are you glad to be rid of the record companies?
Yo, listen, no beef, but yeah.
All right. Well, there are lots of people here who love you, who are very, very impressed by all your continued success. We don't think you've fallen off at all. I'm thrilled that you're still around and you're still. And the people who are saying that, no one's ever heard of them, so they must first look in the mirror before they start to worry about you and your career.
Yeah, and I also just need to learn not to. I just like responding. I respond to my fans. We communicate, and then I don't think people are used to that. And then sometimes they just take it as an opportunity to be mean. But I like it. You know, you need to be a people's person.
Yeah,
I think also my culture, I grew up like that. The king wasn't separate from the people to that extent. Like if the people come talk, you talk with them.
Imbizo.
You don't ignore. Yeah, imbizo.
Toya, just quickly for the people who are in KZN, your own friends and family and other people who are going through all this shit at the moment, do you have anything to say to them, just to kind of be in solidarity? That's really the big story in the country today.
Hey, wow. guys, I think throughout all this is happening, let's start it at a human level. And I think that's what we've been talking about. Let's start at a human level. It could be your sister, your brother, your mother, your father. What you're doing, breaking down, it could be somebody close to you. So think of that. We are hurting other humans. Let's not hurt other humans, but let's find a solution. Like, take care of each other. We've already, 1994 is not that far. And when we fail to learn from history, that's when it repeats itself. So take care of each other. And just remember, we're all humans. We all hurt. But there is a way to get through this. Ngokuthi sikhulume bafethu. Singalimazani. Singashisi. Umhlaba. Because that's all we have. What's going to happen when we go back? All the people that are not going to have jobs. Indlala. This is kothula, guys. So I'm just saying, it's not like I'm here now. I don't care. I'm out of touch. I know the history. We all know the history. We all knew this was coming, but can we not all die with everything in the process? You know,
I love it.
There is a way out. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, listen, you've said some very, very good, honest and sensible things there. I think that, you know, we've been through a lot in this country. We'll make it through this as well. And any excuse to talk to you is a good excuse. We love you lots and we will see you soon.
Yes, I love you guys lots. And you told them about the Afro Wave album, right?
Yeah. You know what we'll also do? The Afro Wave Volume 1 is, including the first single, Resurrection, is available. Yes. It's a full isiZulu album, right?
Yes.
And it's available, and we will post all the links on cliffcentral.com this morning. So make
Thank
sure you.
Don't miss and that. And it's a new genre as well. It's a genre that celebrates our indigenous languages through rave. So techno, nice. Drum and bass,
beautiful.
Left field bass. I've always loved those genres as well. So yeah.
Yeah. When you get back, we'll need a proper party. So Jameen just says,
you're invited.
Love you, Toya. And Zuzile Zungu says, Princess Xolo, your mom would be proud of you. Halala girl.
Oh, Nyatogoza, thank you so much. That's Very so good. Kind.
All right. We will see you soon. Lots of love, Toya.
Thank you. Lots of love, Garrett. Thanks for having me. Bye, Cliff Central, guys.
Thank you. There she is, Toya the Lazy. Always good to catch up with her. I'm sorry we had a couple of sound issues in the beginning there, but once we got into it, there was lots to talk about. And yes, if you are in KZN, I finished off the show yesterday saying the same thing. Or if you're in Gauteng, frankly, because it looks like it's all over the place. Just look out. Don't do anything silly. Don't put yourself in harm's way if you could possibly help it. And let's just take a big deep breath as a country, because these kinds of things, it's not unusual. It's not unusual in South Africa. This has been happening to us in South Africa for a long time. And it's not going to go away anytime soon. And it's not just to us. It's happening all over the world. There are lots of countries that are in very, very messy situations. The pandemic has put us through some difficulty. And now we've got this as well. So just take a big deep breath, do what you can do, and you'll make it through the day. All right? Look after yourself. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock, bright and early. Be good. This is cliffcentral.com. I will see you tomorrow.
Cliffcentral.com.